This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Our next guest is a world-leading virologist who's just been awarded one of the most prestigious prizes in Australian medical research, the GSK Award for Research Excellence. Professor Eddie Holmes is from the University of Sydney, and his pioneering use of artificial intelligence is set to transform the way we detect and diagnose infectious diseases. And he's already made history as the first person to release this COVID-19 genome to the world, a move that helped scientists develop tests and vaccines at record speed. And now his latest work could mean we're better prepared for whatever virus comes next. Eddie, welcome.
Hi there.
Congratulations on the award. How'd you feel when you first heard the news?
Oh, I was very surprised, actually. I don't even remember being nominated, so it really came completely out of the blue. It's always great to get recognition.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like our scientists don't get enough recognition. Now, for those of us not in the lab, why does your new AI-based platform, what does it actually do, and why is it such a game changer?
So it's actually a combination of two things. One is AI, as you said. The other thing is a technique called metagenomics. Now, if I just sort of decode that, what that means is you can take any sample you want. It could be like soil, it could be an animal tissue, or it could be a human, say a throat swab. You then sequence, you get a genetic code of everything in that sample, all the DNA that's there, okay? Most of that, I think, say a human sample will be human DNA, but in there, hidden in there, will also be every bacteria you've got, every virus, every parasite. But a lot of data. So you need to analyze that data in a very efficient way, and that's where the AI comes in. So the combination of those two things together, what it means is we can hopefully identify any infection within, say, 24 hours, right? And that's a really rapid diagnostic time. If I can just wind you back, remember those eight, when AIDS first came along, It took 2 years to find HIV caused AIDS, 2 years to find the virus, right? Which is a huge time. SARS-1, end of 2002, start 2003, that took about 3 weeks to find the virus that caused SARS-1. It took about 40 hours to find the virus that caused SARS-2. So we're getting, as COVID, getting faster and faster. Now, hopefully, we can do it in 24 hours.
Does that also mean not only if there is you detect a virus, you can find out what it is, but also you can examine environments, perhaps where, you know, we're encroaching on other areas. For example, you know, we're starting to get into the natural world a little bit close and we're starting to share viruses. Can you, identify viruses before they become a problem?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so what disease, and this thing, disease emergence is, it's always about what you just said. It's all about how humans interact with the natural world and how we get exposed to new pathogens. So, for example, COVID-19 SARS-2, and some people claim it's out of a lab in China. Most people, I think, have looked at it reasonably, think that what it's about the wildlife trade. Mm. Okay, so in many countries, particularly in Asia, you're seeing these animals that are trafficked, terrible thing, like trafficked, into countries like China. They're kept in pretty poor conditions. They pick up lots of infections and they're then either used for food in what's called game food, or they're in the kind of fur farm trade. Those environments, they're a breeding ground for infections. And humans interact with these animals, these wildlife species, on a daily basis. And the more we interact with wildlife, deforestation, for example, the more we're going to expose ourselves to these infections and the more new things we're going to get.
Now, I'm assuming there's millions of undiscovered viruses out there. How worried should we be, and how does your research help us get ahead of them?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very hard to work out how many viruses there are on Earth, right? But a complete ballpark guess, let's say around about 100 million. Okay, that's a decent number. Of those, a small fraction will infect mammals. Humans, through our history, we've probably got something about 250 viral infections we've picked up over the years, right? Now, so animals have a lot. A very small fraction of those are gonna work in a human cell and then take off. That's the other thing. It's not just being able to infect ourselves and kind of recover themselves. they also need to be in the right environment that's going to allow that virus to spread quickly. So the reason why SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19 took off was because it emerged in Wuhan. So Wuhan, you know, Wuhan is this really big, dense population city in China, 11 million people, you know, very tightly packed. That really, that density of people allows a virus to spread. So the combination of this diverse virus universe and the way you live today, as we cut down fires within big cities, global travel, that's really going to fuel disease emergence. When will the next one come? Everyone's kind of, you know, when's it going to be? And it's impossible to say. We're exposed on a daily basis. People who work in the wildlife trade, you can test them. They're exposed to animal viruses all the time, happens all the time. So we will get, I don't want to sort of put people off on a drive home on a Tuesday afternoon. Like, we will, you know, you can relax tonight, but we will in the future, we will get more things. It could be tomorrow, it could be next year, it could be 100 years, right? But it's part of our lifestyle as humans makes this absolutely inevitable. The good news is, though, with diagnostics being what they are, with this kind of genomics I've talked about, that bit is kind of solved. We're no longer going to wait for 2 years to find the cause of infection. That we can do very, very quickly. Okay, and we also have vaccines now. These mRNA vaccines were made incredibly quickly, within days of the sequence of the virus being released. The bad news, though, I've got to say it now. So all the science is really good. The tech is in place. The problem now is the politics is so toxic. It's so toxic. The people are scared to report new findings, right? Because they think they'll get blamed. And this enormous fight between the US and China about COVID origins, it's really poisoned the well and made it difficult for, even though we've got this great tech, it's kind of inhibiting what we can do.
We're chatting with Professor Eddie Holmes, a world-leading virologist from the University of Sydney, talking about his award-winning work using artificial intelligence to detect infectious diseases and viruses. You mentioned the speed is getting better and better and we've got the technology in place. What do we need to do, I suppose, politically and as humans to try and utilise this technology so that when the next virus does appear, as you mentioned, we're onto it straight away and we're not delaying time, and therefore we could be potentially costing lives.
Yeah, I agree. People need to grow up, quite frankly. Mm. The number one thing that I've seen, I've been doing this for a long time, I've been doing this for 35 years, right? Mm. And inevitably, when a new virus, a new infection comes along, a blame game starts, right? You are to blame, right? What you have done is you are to blame for this. There should be no blame game. It's just the way humans live. It's an inevitable consequence. So we need to kind of drop the blame. Don't assign particular groups and the way they do things. Let's just accept this is a natural process. And then let's work together globally. Let's share our data as quickly as possible, as freely as possible. If something comes along, let's report it throughout the world so we can all act together and get this done. We could build, it's not beyond the realms of imagination, that we could build a kind of global pandemic radar, like a surveillance system, that uses this tech all over the world, particularly in places where, you know, humans and animals interact a lot, to do really quick surveillance, share that data, and then respond with vaccine design and antivirus very quickly. The problem is that people won't do that because they're scared of having their country or their group being blamed for that infection. And that has to end.
Absolutely. Now, you've worked on, as you mentioned, you know, various viruses, influenza, dengue, HIV, hepatitis C. Is there which virus keeps you up at night the most? I'm assuming you sleep.
I sleep pretty well, actually, I've got to say. overall, the one that it's kind of boring, but I think the one that is the perennial worry is influenza. Okay, so influenza is basically a bird viruses, wild water birds like that carry lots of flu. Occasionally, it goes from these water birds into like poultry and then or pigs, and then we get infected. Some of those animal strains, those bird strains, are really, really virulent, okay? So you're talking about, you know, 30% of people may die with a very bad avian influenza. It's very serious stuff. At the moment, we have this strain called H5N1 that's going around the world, okay? And it's in birds, it's got into Canada, the US. It's knocking off bird populations, it's affecting other animal species too. It's not yet in Australia, okay? That could be a serious thing. So flu has this amazing animal reservoir. There's lots of strains. They're always changing, and we're always exposing them. So that's the one that I think would be the one that we're at continual risk for. The good news is on that side, though, vaccines for that are pretty well sorted out, okay? Even though we haven't got one that protects against all the strains, we pretty much know how to protect against flu. So even though it worries me, I think we can respond to that pretty quickly. And there's also then the unknowns, right? There could well be lurking animal populations somewhere, things as weird as COVID-19 that we don't know about, that could come again, right? So it could come to us again. So that is always there in the back of your mind.
Eddie, let's say a new strain of the flu is discovered. How long, with this technology involving AI, would it take from identifying, okay, here, we've got a new strain of this flu virus, to producing a vaccine?
Right. So let me give you an example. And I wind back to the work I did on early on COVID-19. So I recall it. So my colleagues in China sequenced the virus. I was then giving that sequence. I put it online within an hour of having it. I posted it online. Okay. Mm-hmm. That in the US, that my release of the data was a Friday evening in the US in January 2020. By the Monday morning, Moderna, working with scientists, National Institute of Health in the USA, had designed the vaccine over that weekend.
Wow.
Okay? And that was a vaccine that was used in May. So 48 hours. I now think we can realistically imagine identifying a new virus and designing a vaccine within 48 hours, the whole thing. I think that's absolutely doable. Okay? But then it goes through the vaccine trials. So that's much slower. So they design the vaccine pretty quick. You then got to do this endless trialing. Is it safe? Is it efficacious? All that sort of thing. Will it work at all? And of course, for some things, the vaccines, we've not yet made a good vaccine. So the design of a vaccine can be done very quickly now. Whether it will work or not is a different story.
Finally, Eddie, what, I suppose, gives you hope when it comes to protecting people, Australians and the world, from future pandemics?
Like I said, I mean, I work a lot with scientists in China, right? And I know the politics can be pretty difficult at times. You're aware of that. They are, on average, they're willing to share that. They're like us. They want to share their data. They want to do good work. So I'm kind of very, I've seen that through every epidemic that I've worked on. I first worked on HIV back in the early 90s. All the way through, I've seen that they're willing as a scientist to share their data and work together globally and do good things. I've seen that. So I'm certainly heartened by that attitude. Unfortunately, again, there's this political kind of spectre above us. And as someone said, some wise person once said, if you mix politics with science, you get politics, right? So I'm afraid that's the kind of overarching worry. But the scientific, the tech that we're making, and the way we work together globally, that's a good thing.
It sounds like science is there. It's around the world, all working for the greater good of humanity and the planet. If we could lift the politics off it, we'd be in a much better place, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, it's been, so COVID, we may see, is being used as a political football, okay? Absolutely, the US are using it to attack China. China have used it to attack the US. And we're kind of caught in this middle ground. But then the repercussions of that are pretty serious. And you're seeing now in the US a very strong, I mean, incredible anti-vax movement that's being institutionalized in governments. mRNA vaccines being outlawed, states removing vaccination mandates. I mean, we're regressing so badly, okay? And again, it's counter to any scientific logic. It's just pure politics.
And that, I imagine, makes the population there quite vulnerable to new viruses.
Yeah, and so you're seeing the rise of measles in the US, the biggest outbreak for many years. And childhood vaccines are really important. As they will start to be reduced because of policy, you will start to see the rise of infections. And to me, I mean, one of the greatest things, I mean, COVID was a terrible thing, right? But one good thing that came out of it was the amazing ability of mRNA vaccines to be designed quickly and to work. You're now seeing the US repealing of mRNA vaccine technology, which is just absolutely mad. And it's the Luddite behavior in the extreme. You know, so it's appalling to me as a scientist to watch something that really worked well for humanity, a great, great thing, just being tossed aside for an idiotic political end.
Does that leave an opportunity, though, for countries like Australia to lead the way in terms of medical research and vaccine technology?
Yeah, I hope it does. Yeah, I think Australia, I mean, you know, you can debate government policy, but overall, Australian governments of different persuasions actually did a pretty good job during these things. Certainly during COVID, it was done pretty well, and we responded in a generally sensible fashion. And we're building the good. Australia was caught short; we didn't have enough vaccine production. We're now trying to redo that by building vaccine production plants in this country. So I think Australia has to be more self-sufficient in this. And I think we are trying to do this. So yeah, I think Australia is a pretty good place to be for this. And I think we are, the investment is going in the right areas.
Eddie, such a pleasure to chat with you. Congratulations again on the award and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. Professor Eddie Holmes, Professor of Biology at the University of Sydney and winner of the 2025 GSK Award for Research Excellence.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.